Welcome back to Too Much Future, where we play the Fallout games. We're playing Fallout 2, and on this episode, we are going to New Reno.
The biggest little town in the world.
Is it in the world?
That's a real question. The United States? The country? I don't know.
Hold on. Reno, the biggest little city. Biggest little city in the world. Wow, so in New Reno, you know, the sign is there, and the sign's pretty accurate looking at these photographs. Like, yeah, it kind of looks right.
Yeah, no, it's one of those, the way that the Fallout games map onto, like, real places is always very interesting to me. I think precisely because so much of, I think maybe with the exception of three or four, so much of like what we're seeing in what we saw in the first game and this one, these are ostensibly real places, but there's like nothing remarkable about them. Right. So when you do see this sign, it feels all the more special or interesting or unique.
Yeah, I mean, it is something where, you know, I think you've pointed out before, like, what, Klamath is a place. But yeah, there are very few things that we can, like, attach a good old real world meaning onto. Just in general, right? Like, I don't know about Reading, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. Shady Sands, that doesn't mean anything to me. But Reno, that means something to me. Yeah, what'd you do in this whole episode? I feel like this is going to be, I mean, maybe we can say big thoughts first, but I think our experiences of this are probably extremely different.
Maybe
if I had to put a guess on it.
My experience was not particularly good. I will say that up front is, like, I did not like New Reno.
Lay it out. Lay it on me.
I think New Reno is maybe where I have felt kind of the tension between my own nostalgia for Fallout 2 and sort of the actual experience of playing Fallout 2 today the most strongly. By which I mean, I'll start today, right? My biggest problem with New Reno, as a space, as a place in this game, is that it is a place that does not make any sense at all unless you think like you are playing a video game.
Okay.
Does that sort of make sense?
I think it makes sense to me because I just played it, but perhaps for the viewer listener at home.
Yes, I just want to make sure that you're following me so far.
Yeah. I can immediately put in my head like five or six different things where that makes sense, but I want to hear your version.
So the my memory of New Reno, and this is also important, I think, to make clear, New Reno is the anticipation of New Vegas. Like, that seems very obvious and on the nose, but like it's straight up like New Vegas takes kind of the core conceit of New Reno and builds a game around it. Whereas New Reno is its own sort of thing aside from the main plot of this game. And what was fascinating to me back when I was a youngin playing this game, like what made this feel cool and good was that it is very complex. There are four crime families essentially that run New Reno. And all of, like, four factions, none of them like each other, and none of them really like you. They have no reason to like you. And the experience of playing New Reno is about seeing how all of these pieces are put together and then just sort of, like, sticking your finger into, like, this particular gear and making it stop turning and seeing what else happens, right? Who hates you now? How do they hate you? What content have you blocked off from yourself? So on and so forth. And it makes the space feel very interesting and in sort of like my childhood memory, right? This felt very dynamic and sort of systemic in a way that was unique at the time. And here we are, you know, however many decades on, and it actually feels very crude and frustrating to deal with in any way, having seen kind of these ideas in more refined and more elaborate and more intuitive forms. Basically, I kept getting everyone in the town aggroed at me, right? Like, that's a thing that happens here, is it is very easy to just turn an entire faction of the town against you. And when I say the entire faction, I mean the entire faction. So, oops, I'm in combat, and I'm not just in combat with the person that I accidentally said the wrong dialogue option to. I am in combat with everyone else in their faction, and there are like 30 of them on the screen. And because of how the combat system in this game works, I have to wait. If I choose to play through this, I have to wait for all 30 of these enemies to like laboriously make their way to the room where I'm standing so I can fight them. And it is just, it is not fun. Right?
Yes. And I've got a great story about that later.
So, you know, my memory of this is like, it's interesting because I think that memory is true, right? I think when I played this, when I first played this, like, it was real. Like, there was nothing else like this. And at the same time, it feels very antiquated and superseded at this point. And I'm not going to say that that means, like, no one should play Fallout 2 or no one should, like, go to New Reno. But it's an interesting tension between kind of how we remember games and then how games actually are and how we continue to experience them. So,
that is interesting. When you ask the initial question, right, of kind of doesn't make sense with the rest of the game, I immediately went to like the things that we culturally laud Fallout 2 for, right? So this kind of sense of coherence of the world. You know, there's caravans, there's a big enemy faction that we don't really know too much about right now. There's super mutants and their kind of backstory and how we see them. There's the Master's legacy. There's all that kind of stuff, right? And there's this sense of Fallout 2, like in the culture of games, right? That Fallout 2 is like more mature or more complex or more willing to go to interesting places where the Bethesda games that followed just are not willing to do that. And I think that New Reno is like, you know, when I think you either you just said this or you said this over Discord the other day. I'm conflating like two moments where we're talking about the same thing. But the like New Reno is like the thing we think of when we think of Fallout 2. And
yes.
And what's interesting about that is for me is that like on one hand it's weird that we do that because it really doesn't fit into the rest of the world at all. Like it's not being attacked by raiders in any way. There's no sense that it's like threatened by anyone else other than NCR and Vault City, which we get some kind of story about. It doesn't have walls around it. It's not protected in any significant way. Like it feels like a city from our world that just happens to be in the wasteland, which like doesn't make any sense, right? Like it's incoherent with the state of the world as we are told about it.
Right. And I think one of the things I didn't mention, but just sort of like from a narrative design perspective, one of the biggest problems with, and this is what I mean when I say like this area only makes sense if you're thinking like a gamer, there's no inciting incident here.
None. Like it is impossible to figure out what the hell you're supposed to do when you get here, which is kind of wild. It doesn't have like any kind of narrative or plot flow to it, which is really weird. So there's that there, you know, it's kind of, it's what people I think a lot of the time think about when they think of Fallout 2, which is weird on one hand, but it makes a lot of sense on the other hand, because this is such a doubling down of all of the tendencies of the game so far. So one, like faction complexity, right? There's people and their emotions and their stances toward you that you have to be aware of and kind of manipulate here. And it can get pretty complicated, actually. It's gritty and gross, right? So it's all about drug use and drug production. There are sex workers and pimps everywhere. There is a porn studio that you can go be a part of. There is, you can sleep with someone's wife or the mobster's wife. Mm-hmm. I actually had to do that in order to move the plot along. So there's like, so it's all of the like quote unquote mature stuff that is in Fallout that really weirdly enough, right, is it's like, it's not interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Like that content on its own is not like what it stands in for maturity here to me. Looking back, and I'm sure when I played this game the first time, I was like, oh, the pornography studio. It's naughty. But right now, looking at that as an adult, I just think, good God, like it's silly. It's a cartoon. It's a cartoon of like what these things are outside of the world. And I think that's what's been so striking to me up through this point about Fallout humor in a general sense. I know we talk about this a lot, but really it is such a huge keystone. Because so often, right, I've spent years saying and being told, right, that Fallout 2 succeeds somehow in this thing. But it's cartoonish. It's goofy. It is like legitimately goofy. And mm-hmm. It is hard to tell, I think, is it purposefully goofy or is it so serious that it turns into goofiness? You know, there's some real The Room kind of stuff going on here with some of these plot threads. But I don't ever hear people enjoying it ironically, right? Like, I don't ever hear anyone be like, oh, yeah, Fallout 2. You know, it's so silly.
Yeah, no,
I hear it being like a full-throated satire, right? So
yeah, anyway, yeah. I was going to say, our memory of this game ascribes to it a kind of weight that I don't think the game mm-hmm. as experienced actually holds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really great way to put it. Yeah, all right. Well, what, you had a bad time. Tell mm-hmm. me about your bad time.
Well, my bad time started early. Started before I even got to New Reno.
Oh, no.
So I had a random encounter. Mm-hmm. It was a group of caravanners being attacked by fire geckos.
Oh, so you have experienced the fire gecko.
Yes, I have now experienced the fire geckos. The encounter starts in the way that all encounters start, where... kind of senselessly you spawn in the precise middle of the map with all of the enemies around you rather than actually encountering them. You just appear in their midst. But in this case it was me and my party, to catch up, my party at this point consists of Vic, Sulik, Lenny, and Cassidy. In my player character, Twelinor, we're with the caravanners, and then here's this, like, group of fire geckos. All right, I think, you know, between me and the caravanners, I can take out these fire geckos. Well, what I didn't count on is Sulik missing and hitting one of the caravanners.
Oh, no.
So then, the caravanners start attacking my party in addition to the fire geckos attacking my party. And you know what happened?
You had to kill all those caravanners?
No, I ran away, but I ran away as I was running away. Sulik died.
Oh, no. Well, that's what you get for shooting a caravanner.
Yeah, and then Cassidy died.
Oh, that's bad too.
Yep.
You had a long way to run, it sounds like.
They exploded. They got like mowed down by the caravanners and toasted by the geckos simultaneously, and I did not get them out. So they're gone.
The dying to fire gecko animation, pretty cool though, huh?
It is cool. Like, it's very gruesome, but someone put work into that.
They really did. Yeah,
I salute them.
Mm-hmm.
So I escape, having lost two of my large sons. And then I have the anticlimax of a couple of more random encounters. I encountered the bridge keeper.
Right.
Yeah, I exploded him with my facts and logic.
Of course you did.
Yeah, the final question he asked me was, like, a character with, like, such and such a strength stat, how much could they carry if they had the strong back perk? And my response was, like, well, how many levels of the strong back perk do they have? And then the bridge keeper exploded in gore.
you outthought him.
Uh-huh. And then I met one of the Morton brothers, who tracked mm-hmm. me down, and I mm-hmm. killed him and his crew. And then I got to New Reno. New Reno is very funny at first, at least, because again, this city is it's not as burned out as other places we've been, right? But a lot of the buildings are still standing, like casinos are still standing, but everything is like covered in graffiti, and all of the graffiti is stuff that says like Jet rules, which is the future, the version of meth in this alternate history future that we live in. And it's just amazing to me to think of like that's what people feel strong enough to graffiti on the walls here, is just like how much they love the drug that they're addicted to.
Look, sometimes you love meth. I don't know what to tell you. There's some really good graffiti. One is just sex, 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 which I think is very funny. That's some of the most like realistic graffiti I've ever seen. One says class of 13 rules,
which is
such a specific and weird thing to put on there. There's some really good graffiti.
Yeah. And the first person you meet, well, you start out, you're like outside of this building called the Cat's Paw, which turns out to be a brothel. But as you like walk into New Reno, there's a character standing off to the side who like calls you over with a little overhead bark. He's like, "Hey, I want to talk to you." And you talk to him, and his name is Jules, and he is a drug dealer, and he's a type of character we've talked about before. He's the exposition NPC that you meet at the very beginning here. And he tells, well, he told Twelinor at least, everything that I could pay him to tell me about New Reno, because he charges you. And basically he told me what I've already said, which is that there are four crime families who are in charge of this city. The Mordinos, led by Jesus and his son Jesus. There's Big Jesus and Little Jesus. They used to be slaves, but like, you know, worked their way up through the social ladder and became their own crime family.
Ooh.
Yeah.
A lot going on here already.
It raised the question of like, how does one cease to be a slave in this world then? Like, what is going on? Anyhow, they run maybe the Desperado.
Have you thought about that? Maybe this is your doing with Metzger.
this is all my fault.
Up in the corner of the screen, Jesus will remember this.
They run the Desperado Casino, and they are the family that controls the Jet supply. Like, Jet is something that, not that they invented, but that like they control the means of production of Jet. So that's their deal. Jet was created for them by someone else who, I mean, I met at least. We'll talk about him, I guess. Then there's also the Salvatore family. They are the oldest family, and they're kind of the most traditional mafia family. Their deal is that suddenly, you know, a couple months ago or whatever, they had energy weapons, which is not a thing that anyone has in the wasteland, right? But suddenly they have weapons that shoot lasers, and that's interesting. Where did that come from? They also recently massacred a bunch of men who worked for the third family, the Bishops. And what we know about the Bishops is they also have a casino. And I'm trying to think, what else? My notes here. So my notes here are Bishop and his bisexual wife.
It's true. Yeah, he does have a bisexual wife. That is factually correct.
So Bishop is like, I don't know if he's like the newest family, but I mean, he's there. I don't know what he controls exactly, but he's in buddy-buddy with the NCR.
And we have a quest that we're supposed to turn into him too, or I do.
Oh, that's right. Yes. This is the guy that you're supposed to turn in your briefcase to if you talk to Thomas More in Vault City.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so for context, that's the only faction I know about coming into this, right? I only know about the Bishops.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, also, like, you know, technically, you don't know that they're a faction, right? Because More just tells you, oh, give this to my friend in New Reno, Mr. Bishop. And then you show up and this guy who was like ranting about the evils of slavery and all this stuff turns out to be a mob kingpin. But what Jules tells you also is that like he's got a wife and it's unhappy, right? Like they don't have a happy relationship, and they both sleep around on each other, which is a very kind of like hard-boiled detective noirish trope. And then there are the Wrights, who are the fourth family, and they are the only ones I get. Jewel says they're the only ones who are actually family, as if he didn't just tell me about the bishops, who by all means appear to be family, but then it turns out he means it literally. Like, everyone who works for the Wright family is like one of their kids.
Yeah. And the joke is there's like 35 of them.
Yes.
And they're all adults too, which is also very funny to me.
Yes, yes. And they control alcohol, right? They control the distilleries. That's kind of their deal. So yeah, Jules just tells you, like, here are all these people, like, welcome to New Reno. And when I say, like, there's not an inciting incident, this is what I'm talking about, is that there is not really anything here that lets, like, from a role-playing perspective, because this is how I try to play this game for the most part, like, Eleanor does not give a damn about any of this. Like, there's no reason for me to interact with these characters, because it's not like there are really problems to be solved. Like, sure, there are things that are happening, right? Where did the Salvators get those energy weapons? But, like...
Yeah, there's no, you know, if Jules had been like, I hear the Mordinos, right, literally right there, are looking for some people to do some dirty work for him, I would at least be able to be like, all right, well, that's where I'm supposed to go. There's none of that. You just have to kind of wander around and talk to people until you kind of figure out what you want to do. And New Reno's big. I mean, there's, what, 6 screens or 5 screens here? Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the bigger places that we've been to in the game. Certainly the biggest city, I think. And, I think it's the same size, maybe, or even maybe a little bit bigger than Vault City. But yeah, I just wandered around. So I beelined to Bishop, right? I was like, hey, I got a quest turned into you. And he was like, thank you for the suitcase. I have another job for you. And I was like, okay, great. So this is the breadcrumb into the thing. And his quest was like, all right, I would like you go to NCR and kill a man. But it can't look like a murder. It has to look like an accident. Bye.
Yep.
And I was like, well, what the shit, man? I'm not going to NCR. I'm like doing this for the content, that we're doing for the podcast. And also, I've tried to go to NCR before and I was murdered constantly. So I'm not doing that again. I need to level up. And so then I had to wander around. I eventually ended up starting working for the Mordinos. I mean, how did you do it?
Well, I did the same where I went to Bishop and gave him the thing, and then he was like, great, thanks, go to NCR. And I was like, god damn it.
That's how I really felt. I was like, fuck you. God.
So I did that, or I didn't go to NCR, right? But I did that, I got that little thing. And actually what I said was, again, role-playing, Twelinor tries to be a good person. She thinks of herself as a good person. Mm-hmm. And what Bishop wants you to do is go to NCR and kill someone. And Twelinor was just like, no, I'm not going to do that, right? Because there's no moral weight behind, like, killing someone for a crime boss. He doesn't give you a moral reason. He's just like, this is someone I need killed. So just like, no, I just didn't do it. I refused. Then I talked to his wife. His wife, Leslie, as Jules informed us, is not particularly discerning in terms of who she takes to bed. So this is interesting that I guess Tonk also slept with Leslie.
Oh, Tonkston had a whole the bishop scenario went a lot of different ways.
Okay. All right, well, I figured, since we have previously established that Tonk doesn't know what sex is, I was like, well, okay, like, here we go, Twelinor.
It was more about moving the plot along than it was about anything else, to be frank.
Well, so then what happens is you talk to Leslie Bishop, and she does not like her husband, right? She's like, and again, right, this is a trope pulled straight out of hard-boiled crime fiction, out of noir film, which is the dissatisfied trophy wife of the crime lord. I could say nice things to her, and sort of, like, she invited me to her room for drinks, and, like, she and her husband have separate bedrooms, right? This is also a very much a hard-boiled kind of thing. That in this world of hard Scrabble life, like, they live in luxury and have two different bedrooms. So Trelinor and Leslie Bishop made love, and had a, you can do pillow talk with her, and you can learn that, well, you can say to her, like, you seem more educated than other people around here, or something along those lines. And she doesn't really want to open up about her past, but she basically, like, her response is like, well, everyone around here is an idiot, so, like, you're not really saying much. And then one of my potential responses was, how do I get an education, Leslie?
I have an intelligence of 10. How do I get smarter?
Right? but she wouldn't tell me, like, where she was from or anything, but I could sort of suggest that she could leave her husband. She didn't go for it, though, right? She was basically like, you know, like, yeah, sure, I could, and then what would I do? Like, would I be, like, I'd be out on the streets turning tricks, right? Like, like, what do I do if it's not this? And then she fell asleep. Then I robbed her.
When she falls asleep, did you get the pop-up that said why she fell asleep?
Maybe not.
I got a dialogue. So I was able to talk to her, to ask her one question. And then she fell asleep. And then in the dialogue box, it said, you get the sense that if you had perhaps been more skillful, you would have been able to ask her more questions.
I did get that.
The exact thing it said, but it's pretty close.
I did get that. And it's weird, right? Like, basically, like, what this is game-wise is that it's like a little conversation tree. And I know if you go through it in the right way, you can convince her to, like, leave her husband and go off and do something else with her life. And I guess that's how the game is trying to tell you that there was another way that could have turned out. But then as I was trying to leave her bedroom, you have to leave her bedroom. You have to walk through her husband's office.
Correct. You do.
And when I did that, he was like, hey, so just noticed you walked straight out of my wife's bedroom into my office. And he uses
what
this...
of it?
he uses this to blackmail you into, because I had refused his job earlier. And again, this is, I actually like this, right? Because it's tropey. It is hard-boiled crime fiction, but it works. He uses this to blackmail you into doing his job, in the NCR, right? Going and assassinating this guy. And if you refuse, then he and everyone around him aggroes you, and this entire faction is now hostile to you forever. So I reloaded, and I was like, yes, sure, like, I will take your job. So one way in which that actually worked out, right? One way in which I feel like the design here sort of worked. Then I was like, well, what do I do now? And then I also went to the Mordinos, and the first thing I did is I talked to little Jesus, who is downstairs in the casino.
Oh,
and I made him angry.
Hold on, can I talk about the bishops really quick?
Oh, okay, go ahead.
sorry, before we get to the Mordinos. So the bishops, I ended up doing like midway through, but I think it's probably just better to get out of the way because there was really nothing else I did for them. I talked to him, I'm trying to figure stuff out. I notice, when I talked to him the first time that like all the bedrooms have safes in them, right? So I was like, okay, cool. Like there's going to be weapons in there. There's going to be good stuff, whatever. I leave and talk to his daughter cause she keeps getting a bark over her head. It's like, hey, talk to me. She tries to blackmail Tungsten into sleeping with her. He refuses. He says, no, I refuse to do so. Immediately goes to Bishop's wife, has a long conversation with her, and then ends up sleeping with her. But I think for Tungsten, there's the Bukowski quote where he says, sex is what you do when you can't sleep. And for Tungsten, sex is what you do when you can't move the plot along, when you don't know what to do. And so, goes in there, does that. And basically is using that in order to go and rob the safe. So robs her safe and then robs the one in Bishop's bedroom, which has a holotape on it and a map. These basically both confirm the stuff that we saw before, which is that Vault City is being attacked by raiders that are at the behest of New Reno. And I think even there's like another piece of it that I'm. Oh, NCR is doing it. They're behind it. Did you see this?
No, but it's something that I vaguely remember.
Okay. Yeah. So the I think it's the map that tells you this, but yeah, NCR are financing Bishop to go and do military attacks against Vault City, presumably to like force Vault City to do something.
Right. It's to weaken Vault City, or like at least make them scared enough that they will capitulate and be incorporated into the NCR.
Mm-hmm. So when you do that, when I open up the safe, it explodes and knocks me down. Doesn't do a lot of damage, but that means that Bishop's guards come and attack me, and Bishop attacks me.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to me spending 1.5 hours fighting my way out of the Bishop's casino. But here's the thing, Michael. You know, because I've got Cassidy and I've got Vic with me.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing fights. Cassidy's got a combat shotgun. I have a laser weapon at this point by the time I do this. Vic's got, I think, a combat shotgun too. He's got a couple different weapons he cycles through because I don't have a lot of ammo. And but so here's the thing. I don't have that many healing supplies. And mm-hmm. enemies don't follow you up and down staircases, right, to different zones.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would do, but when you attack them and you hit them and you go up to the next zone, their HP doesn't reset. Their HP stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so cue that 1.5 hours, I go downstairs. I do one or two rounds of combat where we shoot people once or twice. I go back up. I go into my Pip-Boy. I hit the button that says rest until party healed. I wait 2.5 weeks. of in-game time, just hanging out on the third floor, just living my life, doing whatever. I go back downstairs, I shoot two more guys, I go back upstairs, I wait 1.5-2 weeks. And so like by the time I'm done, I think 2 full in-game months have passed. I get the our village is dying thing.
Yeah.
Like screen, I get that in the middle of it, keep doing it. So I fight all the people on the second floor. I fight all the people on the first floor. The first floor takes forever. I end up fighting a bunch of casino patrons. Just
the siege
just
of the Bishop's casino.
And here's the wild part about it too. So we had, you know, I still have the critical failures, which y'all please, if you play this game on your own, don't do this. This is like the worst decision I've ever made. It's made my life so much harder. But so what'll happen is it'll just be like someone fires a gun. There's a 50-50 shot. They lose all their ammo and now they're just melee only. There's a 50-50 shot. They just kill somebody else, you know, like a casino patron. At one point I was shooting at someone like the bartender and I ended up shooting the comedian who's like behind a cage. And so it's just like awful bar brawl kind of nightmare scenario. But eventually I got out of it. I defeated the bishops. I got a lot of experience for doing that. And then everyone pretended as if that didn't happen. I just went off along my merry way. But that's how the bishops in total ended for me. So I never went to NCR. I'm not going to do that mission. All that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You were talking about the Mordinos, though.
Yeah, so after this, I'm like, well, what do I do next? Got to find some content to farm.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the Mordinos, and I talk to Jesus Jr., or little Jesus, and I make him angry at me, and then all the Mordinos aggro me, and then I'm like, oh my god, I'm not going to fight an entire casino's worth of people, so I reload. And then I go upstairs, and I meet Big Jesus, who is, of course, the boss, and he is a guy who does not look well. Like the way he's described is like he's always like he's like sweating and wheezing and so on and so forth.
Yeah. He seems to be in poor health.
Yeah. And he gives you a job to deliver a briefcase or something like that to one of his contacts outside of town at an old set of what they call the stables.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, right? Like whatever. Again, right? Like from a role-playing perspective, I just have no reason, like, Twelinor has no reason to do any of this, but mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. I go out to the stables. It's like it looks like a sort of weird old military base, or like at least two old garages or something. But you have to deliver this briefcase to, I think, a guy named Ramirez,
Think so. Yeah, Ramirez. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. So then you go into the stables, and it turns out these are stables for slaves.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is somehow we just keep getting worse and worse. Like, I mean, slavery, universal evil to begin mm-hmm. with, but this is like some truly like through the looking glass shit. It's awful.
Yeah. So it turns out this is the lab where Jet is being produced. And how it is, well, I learned how it was produced, but it is being tested on slaves, right? Yeah. To make sure that the batches are good or that the strength is right or whatever. So there's just a bunch of slaves here who are being experimented on with this highly addictive drug. And I deliver the briefcase, and that's kind of it. Then you can go back to the Mordinos, except there is also like a stairway or a ladder going down underneath this. And if you go down there, you go end up in a little cleaner lab environment, and you meet a fellow named Myron. Did you meet Myron?
I did. This whole little place was weird for me because, you know, Tungsten has a massive science skill. Like, it's really high. Mm-hmm. But I was like trying to figure out, because like I could have a conversation with someone here that was like that clearly I could get part of, where she was like, oh, so you're a pharmacist? And I was like, yeah, of course I'm a pharmacist. And I could like look at a document, but the game was like, you can't get enough out of it, or you don't understand. And I have like a 105% science skill. And so I actually looked it up. I was like, gosh, I feel like there's something I could be doing here. And sadly, I think that Tungsten has the required science skill for a lot of like dialogue options around science, but not enough intelligence to see the dialogue option.
Huh.
Which is like some like real like Jacques Rancière kind of shit, right? Like, like I know science inherently in my mind. Like, I'm good at science, but I don't know the words to say to let other people know that I know science. It's just like, whoa. Which kind of sucks, because I thought it would be fun to like have, you know, this like real strong, weird character who was just like good at science and energy weapons. And it looks like the game just will not let me access the dialogue options, which is unfortunate. But I did go down to meet Myron, and didn't have a very productive thing, because A, I thought science would allow me to have a cool conversation, but B, the game's not letting me see it. So what did you, I'm sure you got to have a weird convo with him.
Yeah, so because I am a woman in-game, mm-hmm. Myron is extremely creepy to me, right? Myron does nothing but, like, make come-ons toward you constantly if you're a woman. And to, like, give you some idea of who Myron is, he is a Quentin Tarantino character. Like, straight up, literally.
He is,
like,
he is. Yeah, that's I had not put that together, but he's like a know-it-all 19-year-old hyper-edgy nerd.
Yes, exactly, right? And I don't even mean that as, like, a bad thing, right? It's just, like, it's one of those things where it's, like, I can see quite clearly kind of the cultural matrix out of which this character comes, right? The cultural moment. Mm-hmm. So he's this pasty, sort of bug-eyed little, like, he's a prodigy, right? He is just a kid. It turns out if you kill him, you get the child killer perk. So he does count as a child within the game's larger structure.
Interesting. Yes.
So I did that in a time that never was. He doesn't like slaves. He thinks it is completely fine to just murder tons of slaves to perfect his Jet synthesis. And this was the point where, like, I did the real role playing thing and was like, Chalinor doesn't like people, like, she doesn't like slavers, and you're not giving me a very good reason to like you, Myron, so I'm just going to kill you. And then I got the child killer perk. So I reloaded, because child killer locks you out of a bunch of other crap. Mm-hmm. And instead, Myron joined my party. I'm going to fix him, Cameron.
you're going to, as they say, stitch him up in the lingo?
Yeah. Myron is interesting because he... again, I've described his kind of character. He's actually voiced by Jason Marsden, who is a very famous voice actor who is still currently working, and he's good at this. Some roles that you might know Jason Marsden from. He is Max from A Goofy Movie. He is the voice of the cat, Thackeray Binks, in Hocus Pocus. he was, oh gosh, I looked this up at one point because I was like trying to think of all the things that I have heard him in.
But he's good at this voice. Yes. Is what you're telling me. That voice is basically his.
Yes. He did a Haku in the English dub for the Miyazaki film Spirited Away. Mm-hmm. And he also did the voice of Tasselhoff Burfoot in a Dragonlance animated film.
I'm sorry, what? There's a Dragonlance animated film?
Yes, Dragonlance, Dragons of Autumn Twilight.
Oh my god, hold on. I did not know that. Animated film?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit, it came out in 2008?
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing's on YouTube?
I didn't know that. All right. I figured you'd be interested in this, though.
We're gonna do a Range Touch Discord group watch.
Okay.
I'll stream it in the thing. We're gonna do it.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, sorry, I'm freaking out. All right.
Yeah.
I wanted to kill him. I just never got around, like, back around to doing it.
Yeah. But so, yeah, no. The conversation I ended up having with him is, I learned a couple things. This is actually sort of interesting. I was hoping to, like, figure out who the hell Myron was and where he came from, but you don't get any of that. I want to know, like, how this, like, little jerk got so good at chemistry, like, what was his context? But he just sort of tells you, he, like, talks, and he explains about how his overriding concern, like, he wants to make, you know, better and cooler drugs, but it's really hard to make drugs in the post-apocalypse because, and this is his exact phrase, in the new climate, you can't grow a lot of the what he calls the veggies that you need. So, like, you can't grow opium poppies or, you know, enough, like, you know, cacti to get your peyote or whatever. Hmm. So he invents a kind of methamphetamine, which is now known as Jet, by way of sort of extracting and bottling the fumes that come off of Brahmin dung. So that's what Jet is. And it's like it was something like, I didn't write this all down, but basically there was a kind of chemical agent that was developed pre-war. And in a way, right, Jet was invented pre-war. Like, what happens is Myron figures out how to continue to synthesize it because it is made in some sort of, like, pre-war big stock, and it's like a failure. Like, the army funds it. They don't really want it for whatever reason. It doesn't do what they want. So then they start selling it as cattle feed. Or, like, mixing in with cattle feed. And then I guess this, like, works its way into, you know, it becomes endemic to the cattle population. And now Brahmin fumes are methamphetamines.
Yeah. You know, Lamarckian methamphetamine evolution,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so that's, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, there's some, like, environmental storytelling. There's, like, a big book of science, like, on one of the tables near him. Mm-hmm. Also, didn't we meet a guy in, like, Reading or... Yeah, I think in Reading, who said he invented meth or Jet?
No, we met a guy in Broken Hills who invented Mentats.
Oh, Mentats, that's right. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So anyway, but then Myron also goes on about how he feels like the Mordinos don't appreciate him enough, even though they've given him his own lab and so on and so forth. Everyone looks down on him, and everyone does, because he's, like, a little piece of crap. But I could tell him, like, well, you know what would make them really appreciate you? If you left them and you joined me. So he did, right? So he joined my party. So now I have another son who is a huge creep. But then I went back to the Mordinos to talk to them. And of course, like, because Myron was in my party, they're like, hey, we are going to attack you now because you're stealing our little drug synthesizer. So I reload. Dang. I leave Myron outside. I go back up to Big Jesus. And this is the point where the game kind of breaks for me in terms of just, like, my willingness to put up with it. Mm-hmm. I think to myself, I know what I'm going to do, right? Like, each of these families has a quest chain. I don't really want to do them all. They're kind of boring, and I don't care. And Twelinor doesn't like these people. In fact, these people have slaves outside of town. So I killed Big Jesus Mordino. I used Jet on him, and made him have a heart attack, and no one cared.
they weren't like, oh, they just didn't say anything?
No, no one cares. Like, you can go up into his room, you can pull Jet out of your inventory, you can use it on him, and he, like, starts, like, wheezing and huffing, and he's like, oh, my heart, and then he just dies. And, like, he has guards in the room with him. They don't care. No one downstairs cares. And so, that is how the Mordinos leave the picture. Except, little Jesus is still around. Don't worry. I take care of him later. And so after this, I decided to go see what was up with the Salvators.
Yeah, that is basically, I think I did one more quest for them, for the Mordinos. Yeah. Oh, you got to shake down the porn studio brothers.
Oh, that's right. I didn't do this. I did go to the porn studio just to like go there. But, how did that work out for you?
Oh, it was easy. I said, hey guys, what's going on? And they said, oh, here's all your money. And part of the reason they did that, did you do the boxing quest?
No, I didn't. I don't have, like, Eleanor has, like, 4 strength, mm-hmm. So I just knew that wasn't going to go well for her.
And, but anyway, so it's like, hey, you want to do some boxing? I say, yeah, I want to do some boxing. But here's the interesting thing. So, you know, melee attacks happen mm-hmm. in Fallout. Do you know that? Did you know that melee attacks occur?
Yeah, I was sort of aware, yeah.
Okay, so melee attacks occur. And, you know, they cost very little action or very few action points. And so more than one happens per turn. I have a perk that makes people's have critical failures, basically, including mm-hmm. myself. If you have a critical failure in the boxing ring and lose your turn, that's the same as being knocked out. Mm-hmm. So all of my boxing matches, I won. I didn't lose a single one. I just ran to the corner and then ended my turn repeatedly. Every big, bad, muscly dude would come up to me and they would swing and they would miss me and they would swing again and they would hit themselves in the face so hard that they knocked themselves out. They lost their turn and I won the boxing match. And that's how I won every single one of them. So I won a bunch of money. I was able to become, gosh, my name was Hammerhand. You get to choose your nickname. My name was Hammerhand. And even better about it is that now everyone knows who I am. So I got like a, you know, in the same way that Child Killer is like one of those reputation perks. Mm-hmm. I got a reputation perk for being a really cool boxer. And so people have barks that are unique about it, where they'll be like, hey, Hammerhand, you did it. I won a lot of money on you. and things like that. So, like, that's fun. But because I was Hammerhand, when I went to shake those guys down, they were like, oh, yeah, you're Hammerhand. You're going to beat the hell out of us. Here's your money. But then I did that, and then I got a quest from the Mordinos to kill Salvatore. Mm-hmm. Or Salvatore, whatever they are. Is that where you went next?
I mean, I didn't get the quest, but I was just like, well, that family is next, so let's go check them out. And I went and I talked to them. They have like a club.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. It's like real. It's like classy.
Yes, and again, like they're the old style like mob family, I guess. Mm-hmm. So you go upstairs. There's a guy named Mason. Who's like Salvatore's guard, and he's like a huge jerk to you, but you can like even though I didn't have the quest, I could be like, I have information about one of the other families and that let me in. I'm not sure what information I was claiming I had or if that's just like a lie you can tell, but then Mason lets you in and you can talk to Salvatore, who's like a very old man who's using an oxygen tank, and he knew my name. Did this conversation happen with Tungsten?
Yeah, he did know my name, but that kind of made more sense for me.
Okay. Well, yeah. Because
I was, running around and doing all kinds of stuff, so.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. You can talk to him, and he's, you know, you sort of have a conversation with him, and he says, you know, PC name or whatever. He makes a comment to you, and you can respond like, wait a minute, like, I didn't tell you my name. How do you know my name? And he's, like, very mysterious and doesn't tell you why. And I never learned why. We'll get to why exactly later, but he offers me a job, which is find a guy who owes him money, but it was a guy who, like, I think cheated in his casino or something and got a bunch of money. His name is like Pretty Boy Lloyd.
It's Pretty Boy Lloyd. Yeah, this quest really threw me for it. I mean, you can find out that basically he's basically a card shark.
Yes, and, exactly.
And he stole, he quote unquote stole $1,000.
Right. He stole in the sense that he is like very good at playing cards in a way that the casino owner doesn't like. So yeah, I went out and I tracked him down. He's in the basement of the Mordino Casino. Which,
yep.
It's just like, I just had to look around for him and I found mm-hmm. him down there. Mm-hmm. And he tells you that he doesn't have the money because he hid it. And where he hid it is a place called Golgotha,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, if you never went to Bible school, like that is the name of the area where Christ was crucified, along with, you know, other folks. But like, that's the big one, right? That was the big person who got hung on the cross. There was Golgotha. And
the phrasing of that, you know, there's like a lot of places where people got hung on the cross, but the famous guy, you know, that
I mean, to be fair, right? Like that's what the Romans were doing.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But, you know, it's like, well, you know, I know a lot of like thieves and, you know, thieves and petty other criminals that you got hung on a cross there, but the big guy,
yeah,
you know, the famous person.
I didn't get any sort of like lore justification for why this place exists, although I guess it must be like New Reno's graveyard, but it is like the most metal as hell graveyard because it is just a like crossroads out in the desert where all of the like roads have been broken up such that only the intersection remains in the perfect proportional shape of a massive crucifix. And then there are a bunch of graves and like bodies on pikes just everywhere. And I forced Lloyd to forced Lloyd to come out with me there. And again, you can imagine kind of like the anticipation here of New Vegas in the opening mm-hmm. scene there where you are taken out into the desert and shot. Right. So what I did is I had Lloyd find, like, he had hid the money out here. I had him, he like told me like, oh, it's in this grave. And I had the choice of whether, so I could have gone out here myself, I think, and I could have let him go. I forced him to come with me. And then I forced him to point out the grave, and then I told him to start digging. I could have started digging myself, but as he was digging, he dug up a landmine and then looked at me sheepishly and then set it aside. And I was like, yeah, Lloyd, that's right. So he digs up the grave, and there's like a little hatch down there where he's kept his money. And I tell him to go in there because, again, like he's established that he traps these things. So I make him go down in there. And then while he's in there, I throw the landmine in after him. And then he dies. I explode him that way. I did it mostly because like I wanted to see if it would work, and it did.
Well, now you know.
Yeah. So then I went down into his little hatch and I got his stash. I got the money and I brought that back to Salvatore. This is where things go bad for me and Salvatore. So if you have a different version of this story, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, so I went to do... So I already have the quest to kill Salvatore, right? But I go over to Salvatore, I start trying to do stuff. He gives me the pretty boy Floyd. Not Floyd, that's the real one. Lloyd. I go down to the thing. I also run around looking for him. I find him in the casino. What you did not mention is that he's behind a locked door.
Oh, that's right.
Tungsten does not have the ability to pick a lock, though he tried very hard. So I ran. I bought explosives to put in front of the door to blow it up. Did not work. And so Faze and I probably spent 15, 20 minutes trying to figure this out and do it. I got stuck. My allies were following me behind, like down this, it's like a one person pathway. So I couldn't backtrack. And so I had to like manually make them move the whole way back. So this whole thing, very stressful. So I was like, well, you know, I'd already got the Salvatore quest. I'll just kill Salvatore. I rolled up in there. Close the door behind Salvatore or between me and Salvatore, and then shot him to death, and then fought all of his dudes up and down. Very similar scenario to the bishops, but way far, far fewer people. What is interesting, though, is that in your local area, right, even people who are not in combat are, like, quote-unquote in combat, so they're doing their actions in the combat rotation, and sometimes it'll just be, the game uses the language of prostitute, but it'll just say, like, prostitute uses jet.
Yes.
Like, not related to combat at all. Just doing jet in the turn order appropriately. And I thought that was
It's fun. Interesting how VATS just, like, once it gets activated, it, like, explodes outward and just everyone gets caught in it.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, when I guess it's like, you know, the when you're seeing the world moment by moment, turn by turn, the universe in D&D terms is being cut up into 6 second long, fractions. Someone using jet is a part of that fractional system. So I thought that was quite fun, but I did that, Tungsten finally has a laser weapon, which he's been preparing for his entire life.
Yeah.
And it does about the same amount of damage as his thing, because it's just a laser pistol. But he's waiting on a rifle. He's going to have a rifle at some point, and that'll be good. Mm-hmm. But that's... So I killed him, went and turned it into the Mordinos, and the Mordinos were like, thank you for doing that. And then they were like, please leave now. And I did. So what'd you do with Salvatore?
So I come back, and I talk with Mason outside of the office. This may have been my mistake, because I, for whatever reason, I just assumed that I wouldn't, because of the way the game had kind of treated me in this area before, I just assumed I wouldn't be able to walk straight into Salvatore's office. So I talked with Mason to, like, let me into the office. I have no option to interact with him in a good way. Like, I just cannot, like, for whatever reason, this character is written such that, or, like, his opinion of me is so low that if I talk to him, anything I say pisses him off and he attacks me. And all of his guards attack me. And so I killed them.
Mm-hmm.
I killed them. And then I killed Salvatore because he freaks out, right? Like, once I start killing his guards, even though his guards are the ones who hostled me, he's, like, running around and he just, like, runs into the corner and just keeps running because he can't escape. So I killed him. The end. and that's the end of the Salvatores, right? And that leaves one family, which are the Wrights.
Here is where I did the bishop stuff. Mm-hmm. Boom, boom, boom. And then I went to the Wrights. So same spot. Mm-hmm. The Wrights actually weren't that complicated for me. I thought that was actually pretty done, because I was like, because the right question here is the right question. basically Richard Wright, which these people are white people, by the way. Richard Wright,
I'm not sure. I don't know if they knew what they were doing when they named him, but maybe they did.
Maybe they didn't know that. Yeah, the name Richard Wright.
Richard Wright, very
famous.
Like,
famous black American novelist.
Yes.
Like, hugely important and famous. And so, just for if people don't know. So, kind of, it's really weird to see the name show up here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So, you can find out how he died. I got the sense there was perhaps a more complicated way of dealing with this, but they gave me a list of names, and I went and talked to all those names. And one of them is Jesus Mordino. Little Jesus Mordino. One of them is a guy who runs a Kim's store. One of them was Jules, who did the thing, and another one was like a jet dealer. Basically, Richard Wright dies of jet overdose, and they wanted to figure out why. And I talked to all those people, and I didn't really come up with a good answer. They all kind of point fingers at one another, and so I just said... It was the guy who owns the Kim store. He was really rude to me, and I was like, yeah, might as well be you. Sorry.
Yeah. So how this worked out for me was this. I think if you... There is like an actual like mystery to be solved here, right? There is an actual person who did it, and I think it's actually Salvatore. I'm not sure. But like how Richard Wright, who is the son of Orville Wright... And if there was one thing that suggests to me that maybe, like, they did know what they were doing when they named Richard, is that they named the other guy Orville, so they were just like, who are famous people with the last name Wright? So Orville, you know, tasks you with figuring out how his son died. His son died after taking some jet, and you can find out, this is all, like, memory, right? This is not actually how the game actually worked for me. The jet that Richard got was tainted, and I think it was possibly tainted by Salvatore, who did this as an intentional hit. I just said Jesus Mordino did it, because I had already killed his father, and I wanted to get rid of the rest of him. Now, here's where this also gets interesting. The Wrights have a big sort of still operation where they're making their alcohol. Cameron, did you go in here?
No.
Well, you go into their still operation. You know who's running those stills?
Oh, God. Are there slaves in there?
There are slaves in there, Cameron.
Damn it.
Mm-hmm.
Fallout.
So, here's another little fun thing here. Outside of the Wrights' sort of, like, compound, there are the children, right? The children of the family are running around and playing. You can do a couple of things here. You go up and you talk to them, and they're like, oh, wow, cool. You, if you have, like, a pistol in your inventory, they're like, oh, wow, cool, you've got a neat gun. you can sort of, like, lean, like, you know, you can be friendly with the kids and lean down and be like, yeah, sure, this is a gun. Do you want to play with it?
oh, no.
Yeah. And they're playing a game that they call, like, Metal Insects, right? They're running around going, Metal Insects, Metal Insects. So you can ask them, like, what game are you playing? But what they want to do is they want to talk about the gun that you have. So I gave them a pistol. They're like, awesome, thanks. And I know a place where we can get some bullets to put in it. Like, because it says specifically in the text, like, when you give over the gun, it says, like, you are sure to remove the bullets before you hand them the pistol. And then the kid is just like immediately, oh, and I know where we can get some bullets. And then I had the option of saying, like, well, you know what? Like, you know what would be really funny is if the next time you see your daddy, you pull that out and point it at his face and pull the trigger. So, yeah, that's what I told him to do. And I asked them, that's now, dark. What's all this? What's all this about, like, these metal insects? So they will finally tell me, because I gave them a gun and they very much like me. And they say, oh, there's this thing that happens in the desert where these big metal insects land. And we've been watching them. And I say, you know, like, oh, take me to this place so I can see. And they take you out into the middle of the desert, like, you know, the screen goes dark and comes back. And you are hiding behind, like, a bunch of rocks or trash or something. And a vertebrate lands. And two figures in that freaky power armor that we've been catching glimpses of come out and meet with some Salvatore guards. And they have, there's a whole bunch of boxes that the guards have. And they have you can walk around, right? And if you walk around, they'll see you and they'll start attacking you. But this is just like, you can just sit here and watch this happen. The guards, Salvatore's guards, are providing chems of some sort to these folks who are Enclave soldiers. And again, we're not specifically told that these are Enclave soldiers, but that's what they are. In exchange for energy weapons. And the Enclave also has, like, a Mr. Handy, like, because the Salvatore people are like, oh, you know, let's move the Kims onto your ship for you or whatever. And they're like, no, we'll take care of it. And then a Mr. Handy comes out and starts moving the cargo. It's nice, right? This is a nice little thing. I would say, like, the ways that this game hints at the Enclave's presence are generally pretty effective. And you can just watch this this transaction go down, and when it's over, you get like 1500 experience. You know, after a while, if you go back to the Wright compound, Wright has been accidentally killed by one of his children, and then all of his children have also shot each other.
That's awful. That's that's truly bad.
And
that didn't happen to me. I said, I you know, turned the thing in, and he said, awesome, Thank you. Also did get the opportunity. He asked me where I was from, and I got the opportunity to monologue about being from Arroyo for a very long time.
Oh, yes, I did. Did you do this too?
That's very funny, where you were just like, oh, yes, you know, it was a beautiful place. Idyllic, in fact, except for the possessed plants and the temporal trials full of giant man-eating insects. And have I told you about my ancestor, the Vault Dweller?
You tell him the entire plot of Fallout 1.
I think I got interrupted before I could do that.
Oh, okay.
But
I have higher charisma or whatever, so I could go through the whole game.
You're really, really able to do it, which is, I guess, a clever way of like summarizing the game so far if you've forgotten what you were up to. But no, I did that for him, and then he was like, "Hey, you know what? A cool thing for you to do would be to go to this military base. Do you remember this military base?" And then he shows me on the map where it is, and he's like, "I went there when I was a kid, and I thought it was cool. You should go check it out." So that is what I'm assuming I'm supposed to do next. And I'm assuming it's the same military base, right?
No, actually, it is a different military base. It's another little side area. Yep. Yeah. It is not the military base that we will want to be going, that we will want to go to.
It's not the Mariposa military base from the previous game?
It's not Mariposa, no. Yep. It's just another side area. If Wright were still alive, this is basically like you can go, you go and you investigate it, and then you come back and talk to him, and you get experience for it.
Hmm.
And there's other stuff there. I think this is also, I don't think I'm going to do the military base, but I know there's a party member that you can get there.
Well, is there anything else lingering that you did that we didn't talk about?
Well, there was one quest from Broken Hills about the air purifier in the mine that I picked up.
Yeah.
I picked up from his name's like Rocket Man or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or Rispero, I don't know, it's something like that. You get the part for the mine from him. So actually the last thing I did was after I had... decimated all of the crime families except for the bishops, and the bishops are on notice. The only reason they're not straight up dead right now is because I don't think they had any slaves. So I go back to Broken Hills and I go into the mine, and this ends up being a little frustrating, but not as frustrating as like having to fight 45 people at a time in a casino was. The mine is filled with poison, and like every couple of seconds, it's like poison gas. Every couple of seconds, you take like 13 damage or something. And I just kept I left everyone outside because they would have died, and I just kept healing myself. The mine is also filled with giant ants, and there's a death claw in there. But luckily, I tried this enough that I found sort of like the way to get through with like sort of the least amount of combat and keeping my healing supplies. You get to the corner, you replace the piece in the air purifier, and then you're not being hit for, it's like 10 to 15 damage or something every time. Talk to Zaius, and Zaius was like, thanks for fixing that. Here's something we all pitched in and got for you. And he gives me a sawed off shotgun. Which is like, oh, okay, cool, thanks.
Thank you.
And then I went and talked to Marcus. And I was like, hey, Marcus, I solved all the problems in the town. You want to join my party? And he was like, you know what? I'm too old to settle down. Yep. And so having lost two people at the beginning of this episode, I have now replaced them with Myron and Marcus.
You're so I'm a back trash up to... teenager and a mutant supremacist in tow now.
Yes.
Whew.
Yep, and that's where we leave off, and I guess next time, unless you want to check out the military base, which we absolutely can, then the next time I guess we're going to NCR.
Oh god, we're going to NCR. Oh, that made me immediately when you said that, I had to yawn. I was like, oh god, jeez.
Well, I mean, we've been through a lot of game already, right? This is like NCR is kind of like the beginning of the third act ish.
Is that true?
I think so, right? Like, this is, we are barreling very close to the point where, we're going to finish the game.
I'm trying to think of places we know about where we haven't been yet. We know about NCR and haven't been there yet. We know about San Francisco. I haven't been there yet. Is there anywhere else?
That's really it.
The Brotherhood of Steel is somewhere in this game, right?
I was thinking about that. I can't remember, because I was thinking, like, where is the Brotherhood of Steel? We saw them in, like, that first town, or, like, that first, like, actually, we saw them in the den or whatever.
Yeah.
But they haven't really shown up in any capacity since.
Hmm. And they knew my name, too.
Yeah, and I was thinking, so when Salvatore told me that, like, that he knew my name, I was, like, wondering if maybe that was a hook into the Brotherhood of Steel or something. But it actually, since the Salvatore had a deal with the Enclave, it actually seems maybe like the Enclave is keeping tabs on the player character, too.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Spy satellites.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we'll figure it out. You know, there's a, that's more, I think, than we had in Fallout 1, where it was like, all right, I guess we're just doing this quest. Now it's like there are questions to be answered, which is, you know, that's pretty substantial narrative-y kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, next episode.
I guess in terms of other places that we do have to go, like, there are the old vault locations, right, that are beyond NCR.
Oh, I guess that's like kind of what we need to do too. I mean, that we know that Vault 15 is somewhere we need to go.
Right. You have to go through NCR basically to get to the things that are really going to initiate the end game here.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. I forgot about the Gek. We got to go get the Gek.
Right.
I mean, my village is already dead, so I'm not worried about it. Okay, cool. Well, next episode, we're going to go to NCR and, you know, let us know down in the comments or anything we missed here in New Reno. Hit that like button if you enjoyed this episode. Hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. And let other people know about the show. You know, send this to other people who you think might enjoy it. We don't spend any money on advertising, so word of mouth is really, really important and helpful for us. If you really enjoyed the show, you can go to patreon.com/rangetouch in order to support us at $3 a month. You can get a podcast feed of the show if you don't want to watch it on YouTube. At $5 a month, you get access to a Let's Play that I'm doing, a Let's Play of Vice City. You can hear a monthly podcast with Danny and I and all kinds of other stuff, too. So, check that out. Go to patreon.com. And if you want to know everything else we're up to, you can go to twitter.com/rangedtouch. Michael, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on twitter.com @WarrenIsDead.
You can find me @CKunzelman. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about NCR.
Woo! Until next time, war never changes, but Fallout sure does.
Except for